everybody. Welcome to MEC. You know, it's only a couple of weeks before the Super Bowl, and obviously with Carolina not playing, I'm just kind of in the mindset of, okay, anybody but San Francisco. But what I am interested in is commercials, because that's just the fun for me with Carolina out. So all the ad slots have already been sold out, the first time that's happened in 5 years, and I'm sure Fox is happy, because you know what a 30-second spot went for this year? $5.6 million for a 30-second spot. And even if you wanted to buy an ad for the pregame show or even the postgame show, it was still running between $2 and $3 million. Well, USA Today ran a list of the 10 funniest Super Bowl commercials to date. And so I kind of looked at that top 10, and I picked some of my favorites from that top 10 just to share with you. First, from 2010, let's go with some Doritos House Rules.
Hi. Oh, thank you. Have a seat. Kyle, Jalen. Jalen, Kyle.
Jalen, you play nice.
I'll be right back.
What's going on, little man? I see you got your game skills down pack. You might have your hands full once. I'll pick up the controller, little man.
Put it back. Keep your hands on my mama. Keep your hands on my Doritos.
Jalen, are you playing nice?
I like that kid. Then also from 2010, the commercial made Betty White hip again. And by the way, bless her heart, she just turned 98. She's still going. But anyway, take a look.
Mike, come on! Mike, what is your deal, man?
Oh, come on, man. You've been riding me all day.
Mike, you're playing like Betty White out there.
That's not what your girlfriend said.
Oh. Baby.
Whoa. Eat a Snickers.
Better?
Better.
Hey! I'm up bet!
That hurt.
You're not you when you're hungry. Snickers satisfies.
And here's another Doritos one from 2014. The Doritos Time Machine.
Hey, Mr. Smith. Want to try out my time machine? It runs on Doritos.
Sure. So now what?
Gotta put the whole bag in.
Okay.
Yes.
It's really working, Jimmy! This is the greatest moment of my life!
Get out of my yard!
Jimmy? You're so old. It's the future!
Now, last year, only one of the Super Bowl commercials made the best of all time cut, and so let's look at that one.
Let's reheat pasta.
Reheating pasta. It's cool, right?
Yeah, I didn't know you guys put Alexa in a microwave.
Yeah, we're putting her in a lot of stuff now. But trust me, there are a lot of fails.
Like what?
Like...
Alexa, play my podcast.
When you heard that, did that surprise you? Scrap seems exciting.
We made an Alexa dog collar for dogs.
Ordering dog food. Ordering dog food.
You can bark all you want. I'm not paying for any more dog food.
Ordering gravy. Ordering sausages.
Hey, you better cancel that order.
Alexa hot tub, a sucked.
Alexa, play music.
Okay.
And then there was the incident.
Wait, that was you guys?
I don't know, was it?
Powering down. Powering up. Powering down.
She says she's doing it, but I don't see anything.
Do you? Holy.
Don't stop me now.
I'm not talking to you.
Cause I'm having a good time, having a good time.
But of the top 10, here is my all-time favorite. And this will give you insight into my warped sense of humor. But I love this commercial from 2003, Reebok's Office Linebacker.
When we asked Reebok to send us Terry Tate, some people thought we were crazy. But I'm a firm believer in paradigm breaking, outside the box thinking.
Hey, buddy.
Break was over 15 minutes ago, Mitch!
And since Terry's been with us, our productivity has gone up 46%. We're getting more from our employees than ever before.
You know you need a cover sheet on your TPS reports, Richard! That ain't new, baby!
Hey, Terry.
Hey, Janice!
But what's really impressed me is how Terry's become part of the Felcher family. He fits right in here.
That's a long-distance call, Doug!
To be honest, I wish Reebok sent us 10 Terry Tates.
You wanna play games, Gene? Well, when it's game time, it's pay time, baby! Woo!
But there was one commercial that was not tied to the Super Bowl, but it may be the most revealing of all. And we'll end with this one, see if you remember it.
I'm Stanley Johnson. I've got a great family. I've got a 4-bedroom house and a great community. Like my car? It's new. I even belong to the local golf club. How do I do it? I'm in debt up to my eyeballs. I can barely pay my finance charges. Somebody help me.
And that's what I want to talk about. That's where many of us are right now, up to our eyeballs in debt and needing help. Let me throw up some stats for you that may be surprising. First, right now, the total amount of consumer debt in the United States is right at about $14 trillion. Yes, with a T, trillion. The population of the United States is about 327 million. So that means that if you were to take that debt and average it out to every man, woman, child, and baby taking up airspace in the United States, it would come out to over $42,000, almost $43,000 per person, down to per infant. Now, just think about credit cards. This is from debt.org. More than 189 million Americans have credit cards. The average credit card holder has at least 4 cards in their possession. On average, each household with a credit card carries $6,849 in revolving credit card debt. And then there's mortgages, and auto loans, and student loans. I mean, just put mortgages off to the side. The average person living in America without counting mortgages, they're carrying over $38,000 in personal debt. Now, because my primary gift is mercy, let me go ahead and give you all the pain at once. Let's throw this up on the screen and just kind of let this soak in. How that $13.95 trillion plays out and the amount of debt that we're carrying as human being adults in the United States. And this is all from nerdwallet.com, by the way. We're in a series on how to break free from what is holding you back in life, what's keeping you from experiencing what you want to experience and living how you want to live, which means, of course, we're talking about money, because it is a keystone area of our life that if we can just get this one right, if we can experience freedom there, it has this ripple effect through so many other areas of our life. Family, children, marriage, calling, vocation. And there is no part of our financial life that is more in bondage, more in need of liberation than with debt. So let's talk about it, beginning with a quick review of the overarching plan that we've been kind of unpacking throughout this series. It's called the 10-10-80 plan, if you're just joining us, because you start off by taking the first 10% of everything you earn and you give it to God through the church you're a part of for his work. The second part of the 10-10-80 plan is to take another 10% and invest it in some type of savings plan. So with every paycheck, pay yourself. And that was what we focused on last week, that 10% savings. So 10% to God, 10% to yourself. The 80 of the 10-10-80 plan is what you live on. Now, let's remember what this looks like in terms of a spending chart. First, you would plug in your total income, and we are playing around with $75,000, so we'll use that again. Next, you subtract how much you're going to give. Following the 10-10-80 plan, that's 10% or $7,500. Next, you have to subtract taxes, and on a salary of $75,000, that could be anywhere from 18 to 25%, so we'll say about $15,000 for that. Next, you have to subtract whatever debt repayment you have, and this changes from household to household and person to person, so we're just going to pick a number that's probably low, but $7,500 a year in debt service. And then you subtract the amount that you're going to invest in long-term savings, and following our plan, that would be 10% or another $7,500. Now, after you've subtracted your giving, your taxes, your debt repayment, and savings, then you have a figure that reflects how much you have to fund your lifestyle. That's going to be your lifestyle box, in this case, 37.5. That's the 10-10-80 plan in action. Give first, save second, live off the rest. It's that simple. But as we've been talking about, it's not that simple to implement. And one of the biggest reasons is because we bring a boatload of debt to the table of looking at any financial plan for our life. In fact, here's the way most of us have our plan operate, whether we are aware of it or not. We start off by listing how we want to live in terms of lifestyle. The house we want, the clothes we want to wear, how often we want to eat out, the number of vacations we want to take, the number of flat screens in place. Then, you know, after we've made all those choices, we subtract the debt repayments that we had to strap on to fund that lifestyle because it was a debt-fueled lifestyle. Then we take out taxes and we try to save something, and usually it's very little, if anything, and giving just becomes a joke. I mean, it's at the bottom of this heap. It gets overlooked almost entirely. The exact opposite of God's plan. And the number one thing keeping us from flipping that back around the way it's supposed to be, the number one thing that is hurting our freedom is the hole we've dug ourselves into with debt. So let's jump into that part of things, beginning with what the Bible teaches about debt. And it's not hard to get its perspective pretty quickly. In the book of Proverbs, it says, "The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender." In the book of Romans, it says, "Don't run up debts." From the teaching of Jesus comes this money analogy, "But don't begin until you count the cost, for who would begin construction of a building without first getting estimates and checking to see if there's enough money to pay the bills?" Now, does this mean that any and all debt, no matter what it's for, is bad? No. Debt in general is frowned upon by the Bible, but it does not prohibit it in each and every circumstance. In fact, in normal economic times, you can make a strong case, both financially and biblically, that accepting debt toward an appreciable asset like land, a house, a building, or perhaps in connection with a well-thought-through business loan that provides you with some working capital to start a business or to fund an education that will allow you to take a step forward in your career is not only appropriate, but at times even strategic. But that's not the kind of debt most people are enslaved by. Most of us are drowning in consumer debt, lifestyle debt, debt for convenience and pleasure and luxury and appearance. It promises to get us everything we want, instant gratification, no downside, and it's an absolute lie. All it does is enslave us to a life of bondage, and I know that a lot of you are feeling it right now. I know you are. Debt is eating up every available dollar you have that could go towards savings or giving, that could go toward down payment on a house or for your retirement. It's impacting your marriage, causing stress and friction there. It's lowering your self-esteem. Every aspect of the quality of your life is being affected by this. You have become the servant to the lender, the slave to the creditor, the one in bondage to all this debt that you carry. Now, I know many of you know this. I mean, you're painfully aware of it. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. But I'm almost more concerned for those of you that don't know you're in trouble, that you're blowing this off and you're making it no big deal. So let me see if I can push on you a little bit. Forget how it's already keeping you from following God's 10-10-80 plan. You might not even care about God, much less his plan. Savings, you say the future will take care of itself. It always has. You make enough money to cover things, so you don't worry about that. But let's see if at least I can push on the Bible's concern about debt and get that to get some traction, at least in your thinking. Just think about your credit cards. Let's say you only have one credit card and your balance is just $3,000. You're not behind on your payments. You make at least the minimum payment every month on time, regular as clockwork, so no problems, right? No bondage there for you. Well, let me throw some numbers on the screen. To pay off a credit card with a $3,000 balance at an average credit card interest payment of about 14%, which is roughly the national average right now if you have exceptional credit and you got a good deal on the card, to do that with minimum payments, which is usually about 2% of the total amount, would take 24 years and 2 months to pay off. Over 24 years. Now, at the end of that time, if you're still alive, you've paid a total of $6,754 on that card. That is $3,754 in interest plus the $3,000 principal. Now, wasn't that fun? Let's keep playing with this, because that's if you have just $3,000 in debt. As we've already seen, the average amount people carry is more than double that per card. So let's play with a different amount and throw some different figures up. Let's say your card has an $8,000 balance, but you still have that average rate of 14%, but you decide to make double the minimum payment. You move from 2% to 4%. That should make things better, right? Well, even at that interest rate and making double the minimum payment, it still comes out taking almost 13 years to pay off, paying over $3,000 in interest. So instead of paying back $8,000, you're paying back over $11,000. Now, I've been a little easy on you because let's face it, 14% cards and double payments aren't exactly the norm. A lot of folks have between 15 and 23% interest rates on their cards, some higher than that. They don't make double payments, so let me throw some new figures up. I ran an $8,000 balance through at 18% interest and minimum payments. Are you ready for this? At that rate, it would take nearly 54 years to pay off. 54 years. And get this, you would have paid back with interest, not $8,000, not $18,000, not $28,000. You would have paid over $30,000 in interest, nearly three times what you actually spent. And this is just credit card debt. We haven't even talked about the added enslavement that comes from what we carry on top of our credit cards, consumer debt for furniture and appliances and TVs and the already mentioned cars and college loans and mortgages. And then there's the rising number of people. This is there's an article I read on this recently. I think it was in the Wall Street Journal that talked about how one of the biggest trends right now is that when people max out all their credit cards or they've maxed out all their debt, then what do? They refinance their home, not for lower interest rates, but so they can take out all the equity and they use that for even more spending, which means that they keep their mortgage debt high and alive and well and make themselves their debt hole even bigger. The Bible says, be so careful with all this. Don't let it get so big and so out of hand. And not only that, lower it at all costs because it can and it will enslave you. It is the opposite of financial freedom and God's dream for your life. Every time you strap on some debt, you give away a little bit more of your independence, a little bit more of your individual choice, and you give it right over to that creditor. I mean, they say jump and you pretty much have got to say how high. You know, they own you. Really, here's what debt says to you. Have you been listening? Let me tell you what debt says to you. It says, pay me first. I don't give a flying flip about what's going on in your life. And if you don't, I'll put a lien on everything you have, or I'll file enough negative stats in your credit report. You won't even be able to rent an apartment, much less a car. And if that doesn't get it out of you, I'll ruin you through bankruptcy and scandal. It makes no difference to me because I don't care about you. You want to save for the future? You want to honor God through your giving? Not as long as I own you. And as long as you have me, I own you. That's what debt says. And it's not lying. It is telling the truth. Okay, enough depression. Hopefully I've made the Bible's point, and I hope it's been a wake-up call for all of us. And I think it probably, you know, I know it's playing to your intuitive sense of truth, because I've never met anybody who said, oh man, all the debt I've got, it's just so good, such a positive blessing for my life. It's a source of inspiration and vision for me. Let's get on the solution side. How do we get out of it? Let me give you the simplest, fastest way around, a plan every Christian financial counselor I know almost universally signs off on as the best, quickest way to get out of debt. It involves four steps, just four. And these four steps, every single person here can take. There's not one of these that you couldn't pursue if you wanted to. There's no barriers to any of these. Okay, here they are. First, make a decision. There are a lot of people who do not like their life. They would love for things to be different than they are, but that is so different than making the decision down to the core of your being that there will be change. Change begins as an act of the will, a decision that things are going to be different. There has to be a point in your life where you look at where you want to be, at what you want your life to be like, and decide to do it. Purpose it in your heart. It's not enough to know that you need to change. It's not enough to even have the desire to change. You've got to make up your mind there's going to be change. Now, when you hit rock bottom, that's not hard to do. But that's not where most of us are. Most of us are in this kind of no man's land that just wars against making this kind of declaration. I mean, it's kind of like the guy in the commercial. We look good on the outside, but we are leveraged to our eyeballs, and we are one or two missed paychecks away from absolute financial crisis mode. But the paychecks are coming. You know, we're making the minimum payments. Retirement seems like a million years away. And God, well, okay, we feel bad about that every now and then, but here's how we cope. We cope by not thinking about it. We cope by shutting off anything that might link God and money to coming into our, you know, brainwaves. We flee it. We remove ourselves from it. You know, just trying to think about it. And at best, we give an occasional tip instead of a consistent tithe and just try to shove the guilt away. See, that's no man's land. And you'll never leave it naturally. So make the declaration. You know that getting out of debt is absolutely critical. So start off by saying, okay, it's a new year. It's January 2020. Today the gun goes off. I am declaring war on debt. I am sick and tired of living this way. I'm going to mark this point in my personal history as when I left the insanity. I'm going to make the journey to financial freedom. This is happening. This is happening. That declaration is first. Second, swear off all future debt. Just swear it off. You cannot get out of debt until you stop getting into debt. You've dug a hole, okay. Don't dig it deeper. End the habits, break the patterns, disrupt the cycle that got you where you are. Just say no to any more consumer debt that isn't going to work for you. Now, if you think this is an unnecessary step or a stupid step, it's really not. It's one you have to consciously make. You have to, you know, get it in your head, I'm not going to do this. Whatever circumstances come my way, I'm not going to add to debt. Because it's like we just don't get it. And here's why we don't get it. We are just ingrained in a debt-fueled way of living. Using debt to buy something just is so, like, the way life is that stopping it is going to take a huge conscious act. Saturday Night Live had fun with this once, just showing just how ingrained this is for us. Let me show you this clip.
I just can't get these numbers to add up.
Like we're never going to get out of this hole.
Credit card debt, does it ever end?
Maybe I can help. We sure could use it.
We've tried debt consolidation companies.
We've even taken out loans to help make payments.
Well, you're not the only ones. Did you know millions of Americans live with debt they cannot control? That's why I developed this unique new program for managing your debt. It's called Don't Buy Stuff You Cannot Afford.
Oh, let me see that. If you don't have any money, you should not buy anything. Sounds interesting.
Sounds confusing.
I don't know, honey. This makes a lot of sense. There's a whole section here on how to buy expensive things using money you save.
Give me that. And where would you get this saved money?
I tell you where and how in chapter 3.
Okay, but what if I want something but I don't have any money?
You don't buy it.
Well, let's say I don't have enough money to buy something. Should I buy it anyway?
No.
Now I'm really confused.
It's a little confusing at first.
Well, what if you have the money? Can you buy something?
Yes.
Now take the money away. Same story?
Nope. You shouldn't buy stuff when you don't have the money.
I think I got it. I buy something I want and then hope that I can pay for it, right?
No. You make sure you have money, then you buy it.
Oh, then you buy it. But shouldn't you buy it before you have the money?
No.
Why not?
It's in the book. It's only one page long. The advice is priceless, and the book is free.
Wow, I like the sound of that.
Yeah, we can put it on our credit card.
So get out of debt now. Write for your free copy of Don't Buy Stuff You Cannot Afford. And if you order now, you'll also receive Seriously, If You Don't Have the Money, Don't Buy It, along with a 12-month subscription to Stop Buying Stuff magazine. So order today.
All right. So make a declaration, swear off all future debt, and then third, set up a payment plan that begins to reduce your debt. And there is a great one for this. And I give personal testimony to it. Susan and I did this, and it's just amazing what it can do for your life. And it's called the Snowball Plan. And when I explain it to you, I think you'll see why. It is the easiest, quickest, fastest way to get out of debt. And here's what you do. It's real simple. You take all of your debts, from the MasterCard to the Visa, mortgage payment to cars, college loans to furniture, TVs to refrigerator, and rank them from, and this is what's important, you rank them from the smallest balance to the largest. That's critical. You start with the smallest balance first. So it might look something like this. I just kind of made these figures up just to kind of make the point. So you don't rank them based on the amount of a payment or the interest rate. You rank them based on the balance. So here be the smallest of 400 going up to 160,000 to the house. So you rank them that way. Now, once you get them ranked like that, you start off with that smallest balance first and you tackle that. Here would be the gas card, which is for $400 is your total balance and you're making a $60 payment on it. Okay, so that's what you're going to start off with. You start off with your smallest, and you work and do everything you can to pay that off. Just everything you can. Don't worry about the others. Just make minimum payments and everything else, but start with your smallest and get aggressive with it and it alone. Put everything you can toward it until it's gone. If you get a little raise this year, if, you know, up your payment maybe from 2% to 4% or even higher. If you get a tax rebate, throw it at it. If you get any windfall of any kind, put it toward it. If you were with us last week, use part of your latte factor funds. And if you weren't here, listen to it on the app. It might actually be worth some money to you. But take everything you can and put all your energies toward paying that one bill off. Then when it's gone, and it'll go away pretty fast because you're putting everything you have toward it, and it is your smallest balance, then it will go very, very quickly. Then take what you were paying toward it and put it toward the next smallest balance. So let's again keep playing with this. You had your gas balance card, $400, $60. Let's say you scraped up another $40 to go toward it. So you started making $100 a month payments on that. That thing's gone in 4 months because you're going to what? Swear off all future debt. So you're not going to keep putting money on the gas card. You're going to use your debit card from this point on. So you've got that now paid off. Now your next one is your MasterCard, and that's $700 balance, we said, and so that's $70 a month. But now, see, here's where it gets fun. That $100 that you were paying toward the gas card, okay, you're done with that. So what do you do with that $100? You roll it into this. So now instead of $70, you're paying $170 a month toward this MasterCard. And so that'll be gone in just a handful of months, too, because of the way you're snowballing this. Well, then you had a Visa. And your Visa had a balance of what, $1,200? And you were paying $200 payments on that? Well, now you're going to take that $170 when that's gone and add it to that. And now you're paying almost $400 a month toward this Visa. That thing's going to be gone in like three and a half months. So just by snowballing, you got rid of all three of these in what, a year? That's the way the whole snowball effect works, and it's so powerful. And it just the reason it's called the snowball is because it really is kind of like a snowball. You start off very small and slow, pushing a ball of snow, and then it, you know, it takes a while to push it, but then it gets a little bit bigger as it starts rolling down the hill, and then bigger, and then bigger, and then, boy, it just starts plowing through stuff at the end. And you start tearing through debt in such rapid-fire form. And that's why this works so well. By the time you get to something big, like a student loan or a car, you're paying a lot of money toward it. The little kind of, you know, made-up budget we were showing a minute ago had one of the biggest bills be student loan, and that was $123 a month, but it was a huge, huge, huge balance. By the time, with this snowball approach, by the time you get to that student loan, instead of $123, you would be paying $743 a month toward it. And that's going to rip through it fast. Here's a financial principle that is such an important one. Most people overestimate what they can do in a year, but they underestimate what they can do in three. So what's the fourth step? Create a new plan, one that will provide a framework for all of your future spending decisions, like the 10-10-80 plan, one that doesn't start with lifestyle, but starts with priorities and commitments, as honoring God and savings and being debt-free built into it. Now, you may not think, you know, or you may think that you're sacrificing lifestyle to move to this, but you're not. That's the lie. Debt tells you it's the way to have the good life and to have it, you know, the quickest, best way. It's not. It's the quickest, best way to bondage. Quickest, best way to bondage. And I know it's hard to get your feelings around that, but it's such an important shift to make. I had a friend of mine talk about it once this way. He was employing all of this financial wisdom to bear on his life. And he says, you know, I'm going to be really honest with you. Sometimes emotionally it gets hard. He says, it's kind of like I'm driving down the interstate and maybe it's 65 miles an hour and I'm maybe doing 68 or 70, you know, I'm just not really, you know, messing with that much, but some guy whizzes by me at 90 miles an hour. And you feel kind of like a wimp, you know, like maybe you need to go a little faster or something, but, you know, but I just keep it at that, you know, 70 or so. And then 10 miles down the road, there that guy is pulled over. Or even worse, in a wreck. And I feel suddenly a lot better about my speed. I feel a lot better about the choice I made in terms of how I'm going to drive my car. And he says that's how he's come to feel about his savings and debt thing. Some people are just whizzing by him with this huge accumulation of stuff. And they may have a nicer house or nicer clothes or nicer cars. And they're just kind of whizzing by, but it's on the interstate of debt. And then 10 miles down the road, the crash comes or the reckoning. And they have collection agency calls and overdraft notices and car repossessions and foreclosure notices and tax liens. They have no savings. They can't give. They live with guilt. I mean, they're just building a life on a house of cards. So he's learned to say, hey, look, go ahead, whiz on by. You do that. I prefer living wise and free. Yeah, I may be driving a five-year-old Toyota with 65,000 miles on it, but it's paid for. And you might drive a nicer car than that. That's fine. I'm going to be wise and free in that regard. Those are choices I'm glad I made. And he's right. That kind of perspective is the way to breaking free. I recently read of a 28-year-old woman in New York who put all of this into play. It was a really fun story. And she got rid of a $102,000 student loan debt. And it took her some time. She went without stuff. She didn't rack up additional debt. She made some lifestyle changes. And she worked that snowball. And when she finally got it, she posted it on Facebook, and it went viral. And all she said underneath her picture was, "Ding dong, my loans are dead." And here was her posted picture. She got balloons of her $102,000 debt that she got rid of. And you can just look at that picture and just see how happy she is and free. And all that she did to make that happen was worth it. Now, here's what I want you to remember. That can be you. That can be you. All right, let's stand for a closing prayer. Father, thank you so, so much for caring about us financially, for wanting us to be financially free, and for giving us practical wisdom and clear insight into how to achieve that. You do not want any single person here in the bondage of debt. So I pray that for any and all who would be served by what we've talked about, that they will not be hearers alone, but doers. And that this will be the year they were liberated. I pray that in the name of Jesus. Amen.